And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, it's Stan Weisleder here at trntalk.com. The View from Over Here. I'm in the studio with Malcolm Berman, our producer, and our special guest for today, Kenyon Glover, who's sitting waiting patiently until he comes on. But first, we're going to do some minor news items to keep you guys interested out there. Now, we reported this on our program weeks ago. Body parts for sale. Okay, it's now a two-page spread in the Wall Street Journal. Kidney transplants, which first started in 1954, are now at the top of the list. And it's all in the numbers. There are presently some 95,000 people on the waiting list. But while they wait, dialysis costs about $80,000 per year, compared to only $15,000 for a kidney on the legal open market, plus about $150,000 for the cost of the operation. So all in the numbers.
Well, I'm waiting till they can do a whole body transplant.
A whole body?
Yeah. My head I like, but if I could get about 6'2", 6'3", you know, maybe 180 pounds with abs, and I can get that body transplanted on my head. That,
yeah, in your dreams.
How do you know what I dream?
I'm not going to tell you. About 50 years ago, when I was working for an actuarial consulting firm, we got our first look at the official report on the dangers of smoking and how it shortens life expectancy. A year ago, we reported on the very bad ingredients that are still part and parcel of today's cigarette manufacturing. The latest governmental reports state that about 480,000 people in the U.S. alone die each year due to smoking. But on the plus side, there's been a 24% decrease in the number of smokers from 1965 up to 2012.
Yeah, just a little comment on that. Now they have this big thing, is the e-cigarette.
Yeah, some of the cigarette companies are getting involved in it.
But I forget which news show it was, but it said now the kids are putting some sort of hallucinogenic in there, which they could smoke.
To liven it up. It's like spiking the punch.
And there's no odor. There's nothing to suggest that there are any drugs, except when they start weaving in and out.
Out of traffic, weaving in and out. That's good.
Or walking.
Hey, how about the cost of money? Money costs money. Did you know that? And did you know that it costs more to make money than the money itself? However, due to the cost-saving techniques that our government has been adopting, and that includes also changes in the metallic composition, the cost of making one penny has been drastically slashed from 2.41 cents to 1.8 cents to make a penny. And nickels cost 9.4 cents instead of 11.18, and dimes cost 4.6 cents as compared to 5.65. So who says our government doesn't know how to save money?
But weren't they talking about doing away with the penny?
They've been talking about it for years.
And nothing has been happening.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Which reminds me of, I remember even when I was in public school, they were talking about making all signs and meters and going adopting the European system.
They've been talking about that for years and years.
Instead of doing miles, and it still hasn't happened.
I think there are only two major countries on the planet, U.S. and England, that still, you know.
They're not on the metric system, on the pound and.
But then the English are even more crazy because they drive on the wrong side of the street.
Well, I don't know if you've ever been to London, but I love London. I'm a native New Yorker, and London is the closest thing, the busyness of New York, and yet they speak the same language, so I understand.
But they talk funny there.
Now, that's if you've ever gone to Scotland. And I speak to the Scottish. For the first two words, I understand what they're speaking, what they're saying. Because I listen to a lot of the soccer matches, and they have a Scottish announcer there, and I'm following it, and all of a sudden I'm completely lost. It can be a foreign language.
One time we went on a cruise, my wife and I, and we were at this table with this couple from someplace in England, and for 10 days we had no idea what they were talking about. And I know they were speaking the same language, I think, but we didn't understand a word that they said.
Well, Winston Churchill said that, after the war, he said, Winston Churchill said, we are two countries separated by a common language.
True. Hey, we got something else here. I just picked this up by chance. I was at the car wash, and I picked up a copy of La Gem.
La Gem?
Yeah, the Los Angeles Journey for Journal. Journal, not journey. The Los Angeles Journal for the Education of Medical Marijuana. And according to an article in that, I guess you call it newspaper, magazine, or whatever it is.
A journal.
Journal. It's been demonstrated that the health benefits of marijuana can be successfully applied to treatments on cancer, Tourette's syndrome, migraines, with over 300 cases in California alone, glaucoma, which is the best documented of all of the medical conditions, multiple sclerosis, ADD, and the marijuana is supposedly better than Ritalin for ADD. IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, Alzheimer's, and PMS. Now, the treatment of PMS with marijuana goes back to the days of Queen Victoria, and most people are not aware of that. And while on the subject of marijuana, there was a full-page ad in La Gem, sponsored by Musicians for Medical Marijuana. Musicians? Who would ever think?
They would never smoke or do anything.
Of course not. Anyway, those are our news items for this week. They may interest you or they may bore you. I don't care.
It interests you.
Yeah, so that's why.
And you're the host of the show.
Anyway, what I'd like to do is to introduce our special guest today, okay, Kenyon Glover. And sometimes I call him Ken because Kenyon is a long name and it has two syllables. Okay. Here's a guy that has a very amazing career. Not only is he a martial arts expert, okay, he's a basketball player, ex-basketball player who could not continue because of severe knee injury. So what does he do? He says, well, gee, you know, I got a pretty face. Maybe I'll become a model. So he tries modeling, and he says, oh, this is a piece of cake. Easy. Just go in front of a camera, make a few faces, and bingo, there you have it. So maybe I could become an actor. Well, an actor is what he did become, and that's what he is now. And I'm looking at his credits, Malcolm, and they are very extensive. Of course, I never heard a lot of these. They're still, indie productions. Most of them go straight to TV or straight to DVD or whatever. But, you know, that's how you get started.
And well, I know all it takes is one role on a TV show or a movie.
Yeah,
you just have to be out there all the time.
Some of his programs are well-known, some of these TV series. Yet I notice of all of his credits, about 25% of them, roughly, he plays a cop or some kind of an officer, FBI agent, marshal, security guard, and so forth.
Well, he knows where all the TV series are. Yeah, you get Law and Order. Law and Order SVU has been on for 25 years.
So,
you get a role in that.
Say hello to our listeners.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Well, this is the first time we've had on a basketball player.
Yeah, well,
so I should feel very important right now.
Yeah, I'm intimidated by 6'4". Oh my God!
Well, you're an ex-basketball player, right?
Yeah, well, ex-high school basketball player.
Oh well,
still
okay.
Basketball player,
yeah,
right?
and play well into my 30s. But I try now. It's amazing. I haven't played basketball in years. I try. I go to the foul line, and my shot is short.
Not an air ball.
Air ball.
Oh, air ball. Okay.
Takes me about 10 shots to get to the to the basket. But just one funny story. I play basketball for Lincoln High School in Brooklyn, and we had a New York Alumni Association out here, and Lincoln played Madison at Beverly Hills High School. And I was on the starting team with, I think the only one that of note was on the team was a guy named Lou Gossett, who's the actor. But the first shot, I was fouled, and I go to the foul line, and I'm at the foul line really cool. And then I realized there were about 200 people watching me. And all of a sudden, I felt 400 eyes. I hadn't been in that position for 20 years. And all of a sudden, my elbow couldn't unlock. But I hit the first foul shot.
You did.
Yeah, but there's such tremendous pressure.
Yeah.
I can imagine, being in front of a stadium full of people.
Well, after a while, you just get, it's null and void. Like, you really don't even feel the pressure.
I imagine you have to tune it out.
Yeah, it's just a psychological thing. Yeah. Like, after my first, game or two, when I first played in front of a big crowd of people, I was a little nervous or whatnot. But, as time go on, you just don't even realize people are looking at you and so many fans are just screaming your name.
One thing I think really makes you nervous is I go to a lot of baseball games at Dodger Stadium, and the people are yelling and they got that music in the background, boom, 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 boom. And the guys at bat and fortunately they stopped the music because I'm sure it was so loud it could throw anybody off, but the people are yelling and screaming, and I don't think you could totally tune that out.
No, you can't. Definitely can't tune it out completely. Sometimes you have to use that as motivation.
Didn't think of that.
There is a relief pitcher for the New York Mets, Tug McGraw. In fact, his son is Tim McGraw, country singer. But Tug was a relief pitcher. And he would come into the game, and, it could be one batter could mean the game. And after one time he came into a World Series game, they asked him, Tug, how do you handle the pressure? One pitch, millions of people are watching you.
Right.
How do you handle the pressure? He said, well, I think there are 2 billion people in China who don't know my name. so you have to really think how insignificant what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's to you, it's important, but to the rest of the world, who cares?
Means nothing.
Right. Kenyon, have a bunch of questions for you.
Okay.
These are things that our listeners would like to know. And by the way, our listeners are all over the world. Okay, we're not just a local station. Most stations have a 50-mile radius, unless they get picked up by other stations.
Right.
But still, a station generally has a 50-mile radius. Our radius is the entire planet.
So you're saying after I leave this today, I'm going to be internationally known.
Well, better yet, you might be intergalactically known.
Oh, wow.
Because
if they pick it up on Orion, we don't know.
Okay.
Well, the show goes to a satellite. And that's how it's delivered. So who knows who's tuning into the satellite?
Yeah, we have no idea who's listening. Kenyon.
Yes.
How long have you been an actor?
Since 2005. So, 9 years now?
Yeah, that's relatively young. By the way, we're coming up to a break. So stay tuned to CRNTalk.com.
Okay.
And we'll be back with is it Glover or Glover?
Glover.
Glover?
Yes.
Ah, okay. And we will be right back to
The View from Over Here. Just tune in to CRNTalk.com.
And if you have any questions, it's 800-336-2225. We'll see you in a few minutes.
This is Stan Weisleder, and we are back at The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Malcolm is in the studio with me. Malcolm in the middle. You're still in the middle. And our special guest for today, Kenyon Glover.
Yep.
Okay, and we're going to put the needle to him and ask him some whatever kind of questions.
Can you had been a basketball player for the University of Maine.
Yeah.
And then you went over. Did you try out for the pros here, the NBA, or you just went directly to England?
No, I actually I didn't get drafted. I entered the draft coming out of my senior year. I entered the draft, but didn't get drafted. But I did get invited to some NBA camps. So usually how that works is, you know, undraftees get invited to different camps. I got invited to the Bulls camp, the Bucks, and the Knicks, and I think it was the Bulls camp. But I didn't, you know, I didn't make any other teams. So my agent, you know, he shot me around overseas, and I got picked up by England.
What's it like in England, basketball? Because usually you think of basketball as an American game.
Yeah.
And I know they play it in other countries.
Right.
But what is it like in England or Great Britain?
You know what? Overseas, I found out, is basically the same as playing in the NBA. It's just, you know, you're just in a different country. I mean, it's all the hype is the same. The way they treat you is the same. You treat it like a celebrity.
What about, you know, all the fans?
The fans, I mean, they really, really love sports out there. Whatever sports is in that particular city, they will come out and support you like none other. I mean,
really?
our arena was always packed, 20,000 plus fans every single night. And, you know, signing autographs and whole media. And I had my, I remember one time I seen my picture on a billboard in the, you know, in the city of London. And I mean, it was like,
wow,
like a dream come true, man. It was just so heart touching, man. I just, you know, I felt like a star.
Did you ever go to North Korea like Dennis Rodman?
No, never made it to Korea. So no, didn't get to experience that.
So how long did you play in London?
Year and a half.
Year and a half. And then you blew out your knee?
No, I went to the NBA. I went over to the Bucks.
Ah.
Yeah, they invited me back to that camp because I guess they like what they saw when I went to the first camp. So they invited me back, you know, to see it, you know, because I had put up such good numbers in England that I went back to the Bucks and you know, I tried out again, and they loved me, and they gave me a shot. So
who did you play with?
During that time, it was Ray Allen was there, Glenn Robinson, Big Dog.
Ray Allen?
Yeah, Ray Allen, yeah.
He's in that movie, He Got Game.
He Got Game, yeah, that's what you saw the other day.
Yeah. He's actually doing a sequel, I heard, so he's putting together a sequel. So
maybe he can get you a part in it.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get a role in there with him. That'll be a good little tag team.
Do you know him? Do you converse with him, communicate, email, or whatever?
I haven't in such a long time. You know, it wouldn't be hard to reach back out to him, but it's been a long time since.
Wanted to try for it. Hell, he knows you. I'm sure he remembers.
I'm gonna reach out to him eventually and see what's going on with the movie. And hey, you know, maybe I can be his counterpart, his supporting actor in this movie. So we can make it happen.
Ray Allen, care of the Miami Heat.
You could say to him, you know, if you need a real basketball player, call me.
Or a real actor for that.
Right.
Not a stunt double.
Right.
Do you play now? I mean, do you do pickup games or?
I do pick up games every so often. I'm actually playing in this league over in Pasadena. Every Sunday we play. We just had our first game this past Sunday.
Do you
which
play
we
like
lost.
A, are you a hustler or do you tell them who you are?
You
could be a hustler. You know, limp on, you got a bad knee, hold a little cane as a crutch, and then beat the crap out of whoever you're playing.
You know what? I'm one of those guys that just go out and play hard. You know, I know I don't have the game that I used to have, so I have to kind of substitute in other areas where I can't play like I used to play. So, you know, I kind of stay out on the outside and just shoot pretty much.
You know, Malcolm sounds like he is a hustler.
Well, there used to be, when I was playing basketball, you lose your first step, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's the advantage that you always had. You took your first step, and you were around your defender.
Right.
Now you take your first step, and the defender's right on
right,
you.
Right, exactly. So that's kind of my game right now. Like, I can't get past my man like I used to, of course. But so, you know, I have to find other ways to try to score. So
how did you transition to acting and modeling?
You know what? It came after my NBA career. About a year and a half later, my agent contacted me. He was like, I have this friend who likes your look, and he would be interested in, like, shopping you for some modeling stuff. I was like, okay, whatever, cool. So he would like to set up a photo shoot or whatnot. So we did the photo shoot. And he started shopping me around to different people. And the next thing you know, I was starting to get work in modeling. I was starting to do print ads for like Gatorade and Nike and Reebok and a lot of different
things. Hold the thought, because we have to come up to another break.
Okay. Again?
Again.
Why do we do all these breaks?
We got to pay our bills.
I was just getting warmed up.
Many breaks.
You're listening to The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. If you have any comments or questions for Kenyon,
call 800-336-2225.
We'll be back in a few minutes.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder here, and we are back at The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Malcolm is still in the middle, and our guest, Kenyon Glover. Okay, Kenyon.
Yes.
Or Ken. Why don't you tell us what your major projects are at the present time? What movie? Are you working on a biography? What are you doing? What's up? What's the latest?
Well, right now, I just released my first self-published book titled From Atlanta to Hollywood, Chasing a Dream. And that's been the most recent project that I've worked on, because it's so dear to me, because it's talking about my true life story as far as my life's journey from childhood to where I am now, pretty much. And, you know, I wrote this book because I wanted to inspire and motivate people out there not to give up on their dreams, because you're going to be faced with different obstacles and have to encounter and overcome different things in life. And that's one of the things that I've had to do throughout my life, is overcome a lot of different things, you know, from abuse as a child, homelessness. I faced prison time twice, you know, almost committed suicide once, and a lot of different things I've had to overcome. So, you know, I just wanted to tell people, look, you know, no matter what you go through in life, just don't give up on your dreams. Just keep pushing.
You know what my mother used to say when things got bad? She said, "Don't worry, it could always be worse."
It'll be worse, right? Right. That's a true story.
Where can we get your book?
You can find it on Amazon. You can go to Lulu. It's also available on download, as far as like ebook. You know, if you want to download it to your Kindle and whatnot. So, it's titled From Atlanta to Hollywood, Chasing a Dream.
Yeah, and what is your web? You have a website that people can follow your career and the things that you've done, right?
Yeah, just KenyonGlover.com.
Well, you can Google him. I Googled him as soon as I knew he was going to be a guest, and tons of stuff on Google.
Yeah, tons of stuff come up. But, you know, the main site I go by is KenyonGlover.com. You can just easily find me there. Everything on there will be listed, what I'm working on, things I have coming up, and everything.
That sounds almost obscene. You can be Googled. Anybody could be Googled.
Anybody could be Googled. You find everything on that person.
Now, I looked at your projects in development, and you have six projects scheduled for 2014.
Right.
That's busy unbelievable,
man. Busy year for me, yeah. I'm excited about this year,
Now, of these six items, are they all movies? Are they shorts, series, or what are they?
Most of them are, you know, full feature films, and you have a couple that are short films, yeah.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. How often do you get called for auditions? I mean, after all, you're 6'4". A lot of actors that I know are about 6'8", 6'7".
Oh, I got a good question for him. Do you have to spend time on the so-called casting couch?
No. I've never had that experience before. I hear a lot of people have to do that, especially women, though.
It's more for women than for men. But nowadays, who knows?
These days, who knows?
You're right. Who knows? But I've been blessed not to be on the casting couch.
But now you enjoy doing acting, and
you know, it's so refreshing and rejuvenating for me. You know, especially when I get a role, it's like when I'm on set that day, it's like I'm just so
proud
just to be on set. You know, because so many actors out there are trying to get work these days, and just to get cast for a project, it's like wow. You know, I beat out 10,000 other people that look just like me who's going for the same role. So, you know, you take advantages of all the, you know, opportunities you get.
I think it was Shakespeare that said, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Malcolm, because you're the studious one here.
Definitely, yes.
I think it was Shakespeare who said, you know, the world is a stage, and we are all actors upon that stage in one way, shape, or form, or another.
I think that was from Hamlet.
Is that where we're from?
Yeah.
I believe so. Well, I may be wrong. If I am wrong, please email us.
Yeah, or never call forget us about at 800-336-2225.
Forget about it.
And if you do, we'll hang up on you.
Like they say, though, we act every day. So, you know, it's a slight difference in acting in the real world and acting on camera.
But, you know, I did consulting for a lot of years, and that, I got to tell you, is acting like you can't imagine.
Well, you're always, you know, acting is like selling. You sell yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, it's all in the... in the manner and the technique of delivering all of the BS.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Well,
exactly.
I was telling you earlier, I took, you know, acting classes over at in New York when I was doing documentaries. And before, the night before I had to do a scene, I would get so nervous I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And I decided,
yeah,
I couldn't take it. You know, this is not for me being in front of the camera. I want to be behind the camera.
Yeah, I get the, you know what, I get the same way today, even though I've done all of these films and projects and I go out on auditions regularly, you know, but I still get so nervous right before an audition, right before I go, you know, on a shoot, right before my scene comes up. I'm like, my heart is beating so fast because you want to get it right. You want to be, you know, present. You want to be the best you could be, but, you know, your nerves kick in and sometimes you can't really overcome that.
I have another question for you. You're talking now, you're relaxed, you are at ease, and
yeah,
in your natural speaking voice, you have a slight accent.
Uh-oh.
No, that's okay. Yeah. You know, we could have a New York accent or whatever.
Right.
Your accent is like sort of kind of from the
Southern,
South.
Southern.
Now, when you are in front of the camera, when they are recording you, do you speak the way you normally speak like now, or do you have to put on some kind of a... accent or whatever?
Well, you know, it depends on the character. You know, sometimes the character you have to come across as with a Southern accent. So I can,
okay,
bring that Southern accent, but sometimes the character has to be more articulate or more, you know, formal speaking, so to speak. So I have to lose my accent. So it's something I've been practicing, but I know that I can lose it if I have to lose it. And if I need it, it's there. So, you know,
I remember
it comes with practice,
in college,
definitely.
We it was required that we take a speech course.
Yeah.
As,
yeah,
you know, it was English, right, but it was a speech course.
Yeah.
And the first thing the instructor does, he has you talk into a mic, they record it, and they play it back.
So you can hear.
I was shocked. I couldn't believe, yeah, how terrible it was. Unbelievable. Holy mackerel, I sound like that. Wow. And the funniest thing is, you know, and I still can't get over it, when I see an English actor,
yeah,
playing with an American,
yeah,
or U.S. type of accent.
Yeah.
And I know Americans will do that and put on a British accent, and
yeah,
you don't think about that.
Exactly.
You don't,
well,
don't give it a second thought.
It's funny to hear the English actor who does an American on TV, mm-hmm, speaking his with his English accent,
right,
when he's off.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kenyon, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we'd like for you to, you know, keep us abreast of what's happening in your career.
Definitely, definitely. I would love to come back on. I love being in the room with you guys. You guys are a lot of fun. Thank you.
You'll be invited. Stay.
And we don't have a casting couch.
Thank you.
And next is Rabbi Jerry Cutler, and I believe he's reviewing this documentary about Herblock. Stay tuned to The View from Over Here, and we'll be right back.
The Killer of Lions by Stan Weisleder. There were four squadrons of black fighter pilots during World War II that had to fight two air forces in order to gain recognition, the Luftwaffe and the U.S. Army Air Corps. The HBO special and the recent attempt at a full-length feature film do not come close to the full and true story of these brave men. They were not ball players. They were not rap singers. They were fighter pilots and American heroes in the truest sense. A Killer of Lions by Stan Weisleder.
Hi there, Stan Weisleder. I'm here again, back on The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Malcolm, you're still in the middle?
Yes, and we have Rabbi Jerry Cutler on the phone. Jerry?
Hello, my darling.
Hello. What good movies or things have you seen that you're going to impart to our audience?
I'm glad you got that out.
Yeah, I almost didn't.
Okay. It was a movie which hardly anyone saw, but a documentary, And it's going to be on HBO Sunday, starting on Sunday, the 27th. And it's called Herb Block, about the cartoonist, political cartoonist. Herbert Block, yes.
I'm sorry, you can't talk about it. We don't do any political commentary here. But go ahead anyway.
I thought it was wonderful, to an extent. They have a lot of interviews, and just interviews, with a black and white background, which is very stark. Of course, he was known as a cartoonist who did black and white. He was called the Black and White. But he had so much effect on America and our institutions. And he wasn't afraid of anything, this guy. God bless him. Now, I'll tell you, the documentary stars as Alan Mandel, who plays Herb Block, because they interview Herb Block. He's not around to be interviewed, but he's Herb Block who recites the words of Herb Block, which are all very profound and very, very deep in its criticism of those people he disliked, but he loved America.
Yeah, who did he write for?
Well, he started at the Washington Post. Throughout his whole career, he was at the Washington Post.
Have there been any books with his cartoons that have come out?
Probably, and I'm not sure, but from 1946 until 2001, he would do 5 cartoons a week. And when he got much older, he cut it down to 4.
That's a lot to come up with a clever cartoon.
Every single day. And I remember reading him in the New York Post because it was distributed.
It was syndicated
nationally. Syndicated. And it was what I looked forward to. It was wonderful. They interview people like Lewis Black, of all people.
I love Lewis Black.
He's the best. John Stewart, also the best.
Yeah.
Woodward Bernstein, Ted Koppel, Jules Pfeiffer, Tom Brokaw.
I grew up with Jules Pfeiffer in the Village Voice.
We heard of all those guys.
Yeah, and all those guys absolutely loved him. They looked up to him with great admiration. And he took on everyone. When people were afraid to take on people, such as McCarthy, he lambasted McCarthy. He just said McCarthy's purpose is to destroy. And McCarthy, who intimidated everyone, he didn't intimidate Herb Block.
Except Edward R. Murrow.
Edward R. Murrow, who came after.
Right.
After his Herb Block. But in the documentary, it shows you the way he depicts McCarthy as looking dirty and sweating and just a terrible person.
Now, you say this comes out on Sunday. Will that be on TV or in the movies?
No.
It's HBO, you said, right?
HBO, yes.
Okay, TV.
HBO, it was in the movies for a short run. But as I said, not too many people saw it. But this gives America a chance to, not America, those who have HBO, to see it and really understand about political cartooning.
Who directed it, or who produced it?
I think Michael Stevens, and it's done well. And Stevens is the one who puts in interviews with the journalists, which he had to. He had to put in people, but it's just a headshots, a one-on-one, and he went back and forth, cutting from one to the other.
Does it have the do they show you the cartoons?
Oh, yeah, they show you the cartoons. Oh, my gosh. And, with strong... Johnson is another guy. He didn't care for his depictions.
Lyndon Baines Johnson?
Lyndon Baines didn't particularly care for it, yeah. He was anti-Nixon, and he was Nixon's nemesis, this guy. Also with the Boss Tweed, if you remember your history, New York history.
Oh, yeah.
Boss Tweed. And when Boss Tweed complained, he brought him down very nicely. He said, listen, the only way that Boss Tweed found out about it is we know he can't read, But he does look at pictures.
He looks at cartoons.
But he can look at the pictures.
But wasn't Boss Tweed basically in the 20s and 30s?
Boss Tweed was in, yeah, but he started.
Oh, he started back then?
Yeah. He was 1929.
Oh, okay.
He started.
How old was he when he passed away, Jerry?
I'm sorry?
How old was he when he passed away?
He was 91.
91.
And working up till that point, very good.
Working until the very day, yeah. I ask everyone who's listening, please watch it. It's very informative, and you see greatness. A man who is truly great and a great American.
Okay, Jerry, stick around because we're coming up to a break, but I wanted to see if you had seen the SAG Awards and your comments on that.
Okay.
And not the fashions.
Not the fashions?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, stay tuned. We'll be right back with The View from Over Here.
Again, this is Stan Weisleder at The View from Over Here on CRNTalk.com. Malcolm?
I'm still here.
Still there in the middle. Kenyon Glover, still with us, waiting to pick up some good pointers from us old pros.
And Rabbi Jerry Cutler on the phone. Jerry, what did you think of the SAG Awards?
Well, being a SAG member myself and having voted, I agreed with some of them, some not so. The outstanding performance by a cast, American Hustle, you can't disagree with that. Everyone was picture perfect. The male actor, McConaughey, was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Outstanding performance by a female, Cate Blanchett. Yeah, she was.
I didn't see that, but I
you
saw.
You must see it.
But I saw August Osage County, and I mean Meryl Streep was magnificent in it.
She might very well win it. You know, she is out. Yes. Well, what has she done that she hasn't been brilliant?
By the way, that's a question. It was August, Osage County. What was the August about?
It takes place in August.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought, because yes. Otherwise it didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Jerry, I have a question, Jerry.
Jared Leto gave the performance of the year. Go ahead.
Jerry, we're kind of like the same age, so you probably remember the same things that I do, but it seems to me that the performances of the actors and the actresses from 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago compared to today are drastically different. They seem to be a lot better now than they were way back when. You know, I like to watch some of those oldies on TV. And there, some of them are quite good, but some of them, when you compare them to today's performances, today is much better. Would you agree or disagree?
A very astute observation, my fair-weathered friend. Yes, very definitely. But you know, they've perfected the craft considerably.
Yeah, but would that be also due to technique? The technical aspects of it.
Well, technical and also acting. You know, they have the benefit of acting classes, but very good acting classes. And then in those years, it was you had a good face, they'd grab you and they'd put you into a movie.
Yeah, but the cameras were pretty much in one position. The actors, you know, couldn't really move around. Now they can just act and the camera follows you.
Well, I don't know. I think today they're these kids, the good actors anyway, they really learn their craft.
Okay, Jerry, I think we're going to have to say goodbye. What do you have planned for next week, or do you have anything planned?
He's going to wake up.
I will have a film. Which film?
You will have a film. Okay.
I'm going to see a couple, but I will choose one of them.
Okay. It's the mystery. What will Jerry Cutler see next week?
And
bring Jeff along, please.
I'll take Jeff with me. Yes.
Yeah, Jerry, as soon as you know what you're going to review, let us know so we can send it out on our bulletin. you know, our bulletin.
And you can read Jerry's blog or Jerry's review on the view from over www.viewfromoverhere.com. Jerry, I will speak to you about sending it to us.
Okay, probably Tim's Veneer, incidentally, next week.
Which one?
Tim's Veneer.
I never.
It looks good. I don't know how good it'll be, but it looks good.
We'll find out next week.
Take care, guys. Okay.
All right, take care, Jerry.
Bye.
Okay. You're listening to The View from Over Here. We'll be back next week at the same time. And also Saturday at 2 p.m. rerun.
I thought Saturday at 1 o'clock.
I think it's 2. Maybe it's 1.
It's 1.
1? But I think it's Sunday at 5 p.m.
Sunday at 5. That one you got right.
We will see you next week. Have a great week. And by the way, happy birthday, Martin Luther King.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of Infinity X and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.